Hello and welcome back to the My Entertainment World podcast. Today we have an episode of the nominee interview series for you. I am interviewing Steve Ross, who is one of our Artist of the Year nominees in our Critic Picks Awards for 2024. Being an Artist of the Year is a new thing in our nominations. Usually it is an award given out at the actual, when we announce the winners, it used to be a party. And we used to have just one every year, but 2024 was a year that had multiple people standing out in this category where we didn't know who we wanted to pick. So we put it in the nominations section so that we could honor five different people, regardless of who wins the category. So one of the people nominated in that category this year is Steve Ross, who is one of my all-time favorite Stratford performers. He's been with the festival for many, many years. And he's always been a character actor. And then this year he had the big starring role in the musical with the face on the side of the bus, you know, season of his career kind of thing. But then what made it so special is that he also down the road, there's another company in Stratford that I'm sure you've heard me talk about a lot. It's called Here For Now. And they're an indie company, though they're growing incredibly quickly. And they do incredible work. And they do new Canadian plays for the most part. And Steve Ross is also a playwright. And so one of the highlights of the Here For Now season this year was his autobiographical play, 12 Dinners. So we really wanted to honor the fact that he had this incredible year in both Something Rotten and, of course, La Cage aux Folles. And then he was also working as a playwright just down the street. So I think we put those things together and it really created an amazing season in this amazing artist's career. And we wanted to celebrate that. So we nominated him for Artist of the Year and we got to talk to him for the nominee interview series. So I hope you enjoy our chat. He's really one of the nicest guys in Canadian theater. And that's not actually that low of a bar. So yeah, I hope you enjoy my talk with Steve and tune back in. We have a couple more of these audio nominee interview series coming your way, but the majority of them are going to be in print on the website. So check out myentertainmentworld.ca for the full list of interviews this year. And as always, subscribe to the podcast feed for everything else we have going on there. See you on the other side. So my first question is always, do you remember your first experience with theater?
It wasn't theater, but in kindergarten, I was the fattest kid in class, so they let me play Santa Claus. And I had to give out the crafts that we'd all made to the parents. And my mom says it wasn't enough because I wouldn't stop talking and commenting on the, so I made it into this entire huge bit apparently. And so I guess it came to me honestly from a very early age.
And when did you start singing? How did you, if there's any teachers or anything you want to shout out during your training?
I didn't sing for a long time because in high school, he hates when I tell this story. He's one of my favorite teachers. But my band teacher, I was auditioning and we were doing Grease, and he said, yeah, you can't sing, you should do band. And I couldn't, let me set the record straight. I couldn't sing to save my life when I was in grade 9. And I didn't think much of it because I didn't really, you know, it didn't come as a heartbreaking thing. So I did band and I loved band. And Mike Jenkin is his name, and he is the best teacher on the planet. And he said to me, he came to see La Cage last year, and he said, you know, I wasn't being mean when I said you couldn't sing, right? I said, dude, I'd only say it to dine out on that story now, but no, I didn't sing until theater school, actually. Until second year theater school, we had to do a singing project. And the teachers all kind of went, this is maybe something we should look into. So that's sort of when I started in earnest, was when I was about 22.
Well, and since you're nominated in multiple disciplines this year as an Artist of the Year, let's round out the like childhood stories component. Do you remember the first thing you ever wrote?
Shh. I don't think I did I write anything as a kid? I don't think so. I think the first thing I ever wrote was a terrible. I just found the script last month. It's terrible. When I was one season between Stratford, I was a stock boy at the body shop as a Christmas replacement person, and they made me play Santa. There's a clearly a Santa theme here. I didn't realize, but they made me play Santa in the mall, and it was awful. So I decided, in all my arrogance, that I would write a one-man show about it. And I found the script the other. I'm terrified to reread it, but I guess I should reread it. But so I guess it wasn't till I was about 25 or 30 that I wrote my first thing.
You should give that a once over and definitely mount it. I think a
I
lot of
think I
people would love
will.
to
I
see
think
that.
just to torture myself, I'll do it.
So you've been with the Stratford Festival for many years. What do you remember about your early days with the festival?
Going to National Theatre School, it's sort of an assumption that all you want is to go to Stratford, and it's sort of a pipeline for Stratford. But at the time that I graduated, it was when all of the big musicals, Les Mis and Phantom and Crazy for You and all those big musicals were in Toronto. So I wanted to a crack at those. I wasn't ready, but I wanted a crack at those, so I went. So I didn't ultimately go to Stratford for until 7 years after I graduated, but when I did go, you sort of just the penny just sort of dropped that you went, oh, you can do all of it here. You can do Shakespeare, you can do musicals, you can do classic contemporary plays. It so I, yeah, it was like a kid in a candy store from the word go, pretty much.
And do you have any dream roles still ahead of you?
Someone just asked me this the other day. I think I have to stick with Sweeney Todd. Someday, who knows?
So
Now
you
he's all sexy. Now he's all Josh Groban sexy on Broadway. So I don't know if now, because it used to be, oh yeah, he's just this kind of messy guy. And now he's a sexy guy on Broadway. So I don't. Who knows? But yeah, I'm going to stick with Sweeney Todd someday.
Yeah, nowadays it's Aaron Tveit. Who knows?
I know. How dare you, Aaron Tveit?
No kid. Well, that's a good refrain in general. How dare you, Aaron Tveit? So, you've had an incredible year with standout work as both an actor and a playwright. What are some of your favorite memories from the projects this year?
Lacage is gonna be a top memory for a long, long time, boy. I knew it would be a challenge going in, but I had no idea how hard we would get to work and how deep we would get to go and how every single day of the 9 month contract, Sean and I never stopped working and never stopped discovering stuff. It was And could have still kept going for another year with it. I feel so lucky beyond how lucky I felt just to get the role, but to have discovered how much more there was the whole thing, how much more I would learn about myself, how much better I would come out of it as an actor, I think. I just, yeah, it was, yeah. And to combine it with something rotten, because there was so much going on in my head and so much worry and how am I doing in Lacage, all of a sudden something rotten felt like a vacation or something. That's a weird way to put it. But I think Lacage actually helped me be even more creative in Rotten because there was no rules. And I love working with Donna Fior, so we just had even more fun than we usually have. It's so it was such a great complimentary season. And then on top of it, to get a third play done at here for now was so amazing. I didn't get to be part of the rehearsals as much as I wanted because of my schedule, but I'm so lucky to be working at that here for now. She has Fiona Mangillo has done so much amazing stuff with that thing.
So let's start with Cash and dive in a little bit deeper. Playing a role with not only a famous movie incarnation, but also a relatively successful revival can be really tricky. How did you either draw from or avoid the Nathan Lane of it all and continue to find more and more in a character that's been so well explored?
Yeah, I watched Birdcage before we started, and I realized I shouldn't have because I forgot how good Nathan Lane is in it. And I am so good at subconsciously or consciously stealing things. But I think we just made a start. We didn't, we talked a lot about how famous the role is, and we talked a lot about how famous I Am What I Am is, and it's a huge musical theater famous song, gay icon song, whatever. And all of a sudden, we just had to all myself and Tom Allison and the choreographer, we all just had to take a step back and go, let's just do ours. Let's just do our show. So we just started from the beginning of it's about a marriage with two gay guys who've been together for 20 years. I, Steve, have been with my husband for 30 years. So we just started to draw on that and went, well, okay, there's something there. That's the in of it. And we just started really slow, like you do anything. I tried to avoid almost everything. The only great thing that Tom had me do, or well, one of the many great things that Tom had me do was he had me watch a ton of like Rosalind Russell movies, all these old movies that he knew that Albin in the time period would have been his reference for drag. So all of a sudden I got into this whole world of movies I'd never seen with Rosalind Russell and Sophie Tucker and Marlena Dietrich and stuff. And then and we sort of found. We would find he would bring in little clips every once in a while, and I would find stuff that would help with the style of it and would help with all that. So that was the big thing. We sort of avoided anything LaCage directly related for the rest of the time and concentrated on those old movies and stuff.
What were some of the really technical demands of the show, from the costuming and navigating the drag elements to some of the musical stuff that has, like, yeah, some of the biggest belt notes in the canon?
Yeah, it's that drag world is definitely not my world. I love it, and I'm my only experience was the RuPaul of it, but Tom was endlessly helpful with that because he is so familiar with that world, and it was great from the he was so helpful with he would come to fittings and he would help. There was one fitting that he finally went, you know what? We're trying to apologize for Steve's size and we can't. We have to embrace it. So all of a sudden we bumped up the chest size, we bumped up the hip size. All of a sudden we had an hourglass that made more sense to me, and I suddenly started to get a more image of, oh, okay, this is going to make sense. 'Cause I just felt like a bit of a I kept saying I just felt like a bit of a trucker for the first while, just kind of schlepping around the stage in heels. But the second we under started to understand that hourglass, and I just and so then it would then it just became endlessly helpful with I would we would just be on stage as much as possible, and I would say, Tom, hand up, hand down, hand out, hand this, hand that. And he was so right down to the minutiae. We kind of never stopped. I always say he was relentless with me, but in the best way, because there was no other way to do it. I had to be, they say in the script, she's the best drag queen there is. And that pressure was weird too. You sort of went, I don't know how to play that. But so It was huge to really find my drag queen. Yeah.
So you've been a character actor most of your career. Tell us about the experience of leading the musical, a position that tends to come with all sorts of extra interviews and your face on the side of a bus.
Yeah. It's I've only done it a couple times, but it comes with other things. You gotta be a team captain, and you have to lead. And Sean Arbuckle and I talked about that before we started. We thought, you know, we've watched people be really great captains, and sometimes it's hard because you're not available and you're often off in a different rehearsal hall and you don't get to see the other stuff. And but it's worth the effort, and it's worth the coming into other rehearsals and watching how the rest of the show is happening and stuff. It's Yeah, and the interviews were really interesting. I'd not had that huge responsibility before, but it's all, I guess it all just sort of led to the fact that this is our responsibility. That, you know, it in the end, it didn't make any ultimate difference that you're still just playing a role in a show that you're creating, but you know that a lot of it sits on your shoulders. So it's definitely something that we thought of, but it was never a weight or anything. I found I was slightly worried that it would be like, oh God, how am I gonna on top of that balance everything else, but it never was. It was such a happy group that we just really dug each other.
You had lovely chemistry with your scene partner, Sean Arbuckle. Tell us a little bit more about developing that relationship.
Sean Arbuckle, he I'm so lucky because we came to Stratford almost the same year. So we've known each other for 20 years. So I feel like we got to jump steps anyway. As soon as they announced the show, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice to play Albin? But I also thought, wouldn't it be nice to play this with Sean? I thought it would be so fun. And it was. It's the thankless role. It's interesting because people always say, oh, Albin is the lead, and it's two leads in that show, and it's actually Sean's story. And you know, I know Albin is the flashier part and stuff, but Sean never left that stage. He sings more than Albin does. It's his story. He was my entire show. I would have had if I hadn't had his hand to hold. It would have been a great experience otherwise with someone else, I'm sure. But to have Sean, yeah, I don't have the proper articulate words still about how much it meant to have Arbuckle on to play with for that whole show.
So let's flash over to here for now and talk about 12 Dinners, which was your beautiful autobiographical play that they produced in the summer. How is the process of writing based on yourself more or less challenging than creating fiction?
It was interesting because people said, oh, this must be so cathartic for you. And I didn't really find that it was. Because 12 Dinners is about a really complicated relationship that I had with my mom all through my life. But by the end of her life, we had really come to be to understand each other and to be friends and stuff. So there wasn't that drama of, you did this to me, which is what the play is about. But it was interesting because it was interesting to go back to the rougher times in my life and kind of transcribe that stuff when I had already made my peace with all of it. So it was a strange headspace sometimes to have the mean mom back in my head and to get to analyze stuff through the lens of, yeah, she just had a hard time her whole life, as opposed to, I think it would have been a really way more lopsided play, if I was still angry. But it was never my intention for her to come off as a monster. That was the biggest thing I never wanted her to come off as a monster. Yes, she was hard, and yes, it was complicated, but I wanted at the end for it I wanted the audience to understand where she was coming from a bit. And so I think the lens of my having made peace with it helped, I hope. Yeah.
Many of the reviews focused on how much the main actor resembled you. Were you involved in the casting at all? And was that a strange experience watching someone play a young version of yourself?
It was. And how dare he be that good too? When we were doing the Music Man at Stratford, I got a note backstage one day from a mother that said, "My son is the next Steve, is the new Steve Ross. And so and we'd love to meet you after the show." And so I went out and I met this guy, Ben Skipper, who was still at Sheridan College. Amazing energy. This young big guy who was already playing some of the roles that I had already played. And he was full of questions about, "How did you get here? And I've seen you do this, and I've seen," and we just sort of struck up a friendship, and I never forgot, and we stayed in touch, and I'd never forgot. And I followed his career. And it wasn't that I wrote it with him in mind, but as soon as we were really knowing it was gonna happen, I thought, well, I can't think of a better guy right now than Ben to do it. And I was excited. So I was the one who introduced the director to Ben, because Ben didn't know my director, Jan Smith, and stuff. And thankfully it all worked out. I was excited too. It's not that I was helping him or giving him a big break or anything either, but I really wanted, I think it's really important to pay it forward with regards to mentorship. And I was given a lot of chances and given a lot of generosity from actors when I came to Stratford by older actors. And I whenever there is a chance, I want to be able to, and I wanted to show Ben, not show, but I wanted to show Ben that there was a path for our kind of actor, an actor of size or whatever. And I guess it was a hope to continue to encourage him. But I mean, he's so talented. He's on his way anyway. But it was all a cool thing of like having met him because of his mom and then coming back to all of it and coming full circle. I'm excited. Yeah, I'm really excited that he got to do it.
So you mentioned Jan Smith, who's actually also nominated in this category this year, the Artist of the Year, partly for her work on 12 Dinners. Can you tell us a little bit about working with her?
I love that woman. We met ages ago doing Cat on the Hot Tin Roof. She was playing Maggie and I was in it as well. And I loved her from the moment I met her. She is such a hard worker. She is relentless with questions and stuff. And so when I had the opportunity, when I knew she was directing and I knew she was living in Stratford now, I approached her about directing something else, a play called Life Without that we had done a couple of years prior to 12 Dinners. And it really worked well. She refuses to call herself a dramaturg, but man, she is so thorough as a director that it does nothing but help the, at least me as a playwright. We got together both times we've worked together on plays. We got together and she was so great. And neither of those plays, Life Without or 12 Dinners, in my opinion, would be the plays they ended up being without Jan's input. Cause she's so great on the floor. And I felt so confident to go, here's my baby. I won't have time to be at rehearsals. You go for it. And she did. I love her.
So you're in Winnipeg right now working on Waitress. What's that experience been like?
I am. So good. I mean, this piece, I love this show so much. We're led by this amazing woman, Stephanie Tsai. And most of the cast is local. I've worked in Winnipeg four or five times, and the reason I like coming back every time is because it's one of the most welcoming communities of actors I've ever met in a city that I've never lived with. They're so great and talented, but it's been fantastic. I love this show and it's selling well, which is great. I'm so happy audiences are we have one more week, so I'll be really sad to let this one go.
And is there anything you'd like to add?
Don't think so. This is just it's boy, it's been a year. It Lacage feels so long ago now. It's wild, but it was only 3 months ago. But yeah, I keep thinking about stuff that I would want to try if we were still doing the show. I keep thinking, oh, we should try that scene. So who knows? Maybe I'll get another crack. Who kn one never say never. So.
That's all for my interview with Steve Ross. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you are in Winnipeg this weekend, February 1st is when it closes, so be sure to check out Waitress at Royal Manitoba Theatre Centre if you happen to be around. I am jealous that I am not. And if you're listening to this after February 1st and you live in Winnipeg, I am so sorry. But I'm sure that the show is fantastic, and if you can catch it, definitely do. So that's all for now. Be sure to check out myentertainmentworld.ca, at myentworld on Twitter and Instagram, myentertainmentworld on Facebook and YouTube, and on Pinterest, I guess. Our YouTube channel has a bunch of cold reads from back when we were doing our Corona Cold Reads series that actually feature Steve Ross. So if you are a fan of Steve Ross, be sure to check those out. He is our Henry VIII, and he's fantastic. So that's all for now, and thanks so much for tuning in. I'll see you at the next one.